From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
On the program this week, we'll be joined by Dr. Davida Colbert, superintendent of Wayne Risa, Mr. Ken Gutman, superintendent of Oakland Schools, and Steve Ezekian, the executive director of the School Finance Research Foundation. We'll also be joined by Jeff Simon, principal of Forest Hills Middle School over on the west side, and up north in Oakland County, we'll be joined by Brandon Middle School principal Kevin Ayer. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program, we have an esteemed panel from Wayne Risa, Dr. Davida Colbert, superintendent at Wayne Risa. We also have Steve Ezekian, the executive director for the School Finance Research Foundation, and the superintendent of Oakland Schools, Mr. Ken Gutman. Welcome to the program, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I really appreciate your time. And part of our discussion today is going to focus on an initiative that's been ongoing for almost 10 years now, but it has to do primarily with, are schools adequately funded and have they been funded adequately over time? And just to give our School Talks listeners a little background, I wanted to share with the group that in 2016, what was known at that time was the School Finance Research Collaborative, which was a diverse group of education experts and business leaders who came together to try to answer the question of how do we better meet the needs of students through funding schools not only adequately, but equitably. And that was founded in 2016. And then some years later, as an outgrowth of that, the School Finance Research Foundation grew into largely a group of intermediate school district superintendents, two of whom are on the call with us today. And the foundation was created after state lawmakers called for a comprehensive report on what is the true cost of meeting the basic K-12 education needs across our state. And as you can appreciate, depending on from where you're listening to this program, the needs of students in Metro Detroit, it may be far different than some students in the Upper Peninsula. So the foundation has really come together to understand and really identify what the true cost is to educating a child. And with that, I'd like to start with Dr. Davida Colbert. Dr. Colbert, what motivated the School Finance Research Foundation to launch the infrastructure study? And how did it really connect to the previous research collaborative adequacy study that I mentioned? How did that sort of come together as a catalyst?
Absolutely. So as educational leaders in Michigan, the health, safety, and wellness of our students is our top priority. And so as we know from experience and research that the condition of our schools and facilities, things like temperature, ventilation, and air quality, just to name a few, are key factors in health and morale, which lead to educational success. So the SFRF, which is the School Finance Research Foundation, our historic study builds on the incredible work, as you've already explained, of the School Finance Research Collaborative, which people affectionately called it the SFRC. And in 2018, the collaborative produced Michigan's first comprehensive school adequacy study. That study, as you shared, was really to determine the true cost to educate a child in Michigan, regardless of income, zip code, or other barriers or circumstances. And in 2018, that study was updated. So the first report came out in 2018, but then it was updated in 2021 to account for added costs to help students overcome the layers of additional learning needs that were caused after COVID. So the first report came out in 2018 from the SFRC, the collaborative. Then in 2021, there was an updated report that came out that really spoke to the learning needs, you know, caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. And then in 2022, the collaborative study again updated the cost to include student transportation. Most importantly, in Michigan's most rural communities. So the finance, School Finance Research Foundation study builds upon that, including the health of facilities. What is the health, safety, and wellness of our facilities? So when you push all of that together, you are really getting at the true cost to educate a child in Michigan, allowing each student in this great state to achieve, thrive, and maximize their full potential. So the reason why the School Finance Research Foundation really went after the study and wanted to do it, you know, with fidelity was to ensure that we really looped and had the true cost to educate a student in Michigan.
And, you know, for our School Talks listeners, back in 2016 when the collaborative started, I myself was part of one of the small study groups that looked at every different aspect of schools and educating children. I was on one of the subcommittees that dealt with English language learners and the challenges they pose. So I have a question for Steve Ezekian, the executive director of the foundation. Steve, can you describe the main goals and the scope of the SFRF infrastructure study?
Sure, that's a great question. So as has already been alluded to, the legislation that authorized the study limited the assessment, determining if Michigan schools' buildings met standards related to health, safety, and wellness. You can't Google those standards. They don't exist as one package. So we had to first start out by doing a lot of review of extent literature across the country with regard to school building infrastructure, school building safety. Once we completed that, we identified 89 distinct building aspects that would be assessed in all the buildings we walked into across Michigan.
So, Ken Gutman.
This study's finding.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to say this study's findings shine a light on the gap of Michigan schools' funding model. It does not address critical school infrastructure needs.
Yeah, and a question for Ken Gutman. Within this study, what were the most urgent infrastructure needs that were identified? And has there been any consideration to how those needs are prioritized across all the schools in Michigan?
Yeah, thank you. Good question, Bob. You know, believe it or not, about half of the $23 billion in needs relate to HVAC systems. And so we're not talking about wants. We're not talking about pools and gymnasiums. Over $11, $12 billion of HVAC. I think the prioritization really has to do with what individual districts need. But there are certainly some gaps in infrastructure that need to be addressed across the state.
And, you know, you mentioned, I think the total amount is nearly $23 billion in infrastructure needs. You mentioned about 12 of that, about half is heating and cooling. And do you know what the main components are driving this figure of $23 billion, and how are they calculated?
Yeah, you bet. So engineers collected data in each participating school, and here's what they collected data on. On HVAC systems, that included boilers, ventilation, piping, and temperature controls. They looked at roofing, they looked at electrical, and that included emergency lighting, exterior building lighting, fire alarms, security cameras, and emergency generators. Plumbing, toilet sinks, faucets, water heaters, exterior closures, exterior walls, windows, exterior doors, overhead doors, security entry points. Pretty comprehensive, there's more. Interior construction, fire protection, site improvements, floor construction framing, roof construction framing, canopies. It also determined when each building component would need to be addressed over the next 10 years. So 23% of the need was determined to be critical. So it would need to be addressed in the next 1 to 3 years. 46% of the need was determined to be long-term. So that would be addressed in the next, 7 to 9 years. It's a lot. I mean, it's pretty comprehensive. And all of those components are safety needs, in my opinion, our opinion.
Yeah, you know, for our School Talks listeners, in my time as superintendent, I often spoke with parents and community members, and the best way that I help them understand what Mr. Gutman has just laid out here is think of all the different things you have to maintain in your home, and then multiply that by, I think the study was 2,500 school buildings and 240-some million square feet of space. That is a substantially large undertaking when you think about how you assess and evaluate that. So let me ask Dr. Colbert, in what ways does the SFRF study address or highlight disparities among districts in their ability to fund these kinds of infrastructure improvements, especially given how reliant we are on local property taxes?
Absolutely. So let's start there. Michigan's current system of funding school infrastructure is based on local property values, which vary across the state. So you can have one community, you know, that could really have a no increase, you know, millage, and they could raise hundreds, you know, of millions of dollars, where you could have another that could bond and have an increase, and unfortunately, you know, not be able to even get, you know, 20 million. So the variance across the state is large. But every building, you know, that was assessed really had some level of need. So there were no buildings that needed nothing at all. You know, the study points out an overwhelming statewide need to address school infrastructure, as Superintendent Gutman has already highlighted. Many school districts face an insurmountable task of raising sufficient funds to meet basic infrastructure needs because of how I described the differences across our state in terms of the local property value. So this study is very important because it allows for everyone to really hone in on the reality.
You know, it really paints a true picture back to our point about what does it really cost to educate a child. And when you bring in the disparities that you've mentioned, it really is substantially more complex than just school funding, so to speak. So I'd like to continue this conversation. We need to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll certainly dive into some of the details of the foundation's work and really what the future holds. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
We're currently with Wayne Risa Superintendent Dr. Davida Colbert. Along with her is the School Finance Research Foundation Executive Director Steve Ezekian, and from Oakland Schools is Superintendent Ken Gutman. And I have a question for Mr. Ezekian. With this study, were there any limitations to how you undertook the study in terms of scope, such as did you include all kinds of things like technology, athletic facilities, or how would you characterize the scope of the study, and how did that affect what was included or not included?
That's a very good question, because the $23 billion is not everything. It's what the legislation limited us to, which we already talked about, is health, safety, and wellness standards. So like you said, it did not include technology equipment, athletic fields and facilities, buildings dedicated to preschool or adult education. It also didn't include parking lots or updating interior designs. Almost 300 of the buildings that we looked at 2,500 different buildings, were over 75 years old. So think about it. While building standards have changed and how we deliver education has modernized, many of our state school buildings do not reflect modern instructional methods because of the way the building was built, and the study did not address making renovations to make those changes.
Mm-hmm. So let me follow up with that. How did the study engage local districts and communities during, I guess, what you would call the data collection process, and what kind of feedback did you receive from those stakeholders?
Yeah. And it was important to engage them because it's their buildings, right? And they need to make the ultimate decisions about what happens to the buildings. And they know those stories better than anybody. The data we gather is just one part of that building story. So we worked very closely as we conducted the assessments. We had local school district staff with us as we walked each building and understood how those buildings operated and were used. each district received an individual report that detailed the findings of 89 components for each of their buildings. And then this information, along with the district's unique understanding of their buildings and how they are used, will be a valuable tool in their building management plans moving forward.
And, you know, as an extension of that, Ken Gutman, superintendent of Oakland Schools, how can the data that Mr. Ezekian talked about support recommendations from the study for future policy or funding decisions? And has there been any official advocacy that has started as a result of the foundation's findings?
Yeah, this is a really important question because we now know through the School Finance Research Collaborative how much it costs to educate a child. And through the School Research, School Finance Research Foundation, we know what it takes to bring our buildings up to certain safety standards. And so what this foundation study provides policymakers at the state and local levels is the true cost to address the most pressing local school infrastructure needs. It really needs to make school district infrastructure needs an unavoidable part of Michigan's ongoing school funding debate and conversation. I don't know that there's been ongoing advocacy, just awareness so far, but we do hope that policymakers and local districts find this information helpful as they make important decisions regarding public education. You know, we all say we value education. I don't know anyone who says they don't, but we now know, again, this is what it costs to educate a child, and this is what it costs to bring our buildings up to a certain standard of safety, at the very least. Now we have to decide what we're going to do with all that information.
Mm-hmm. You know, I am aware, one last question for Dr. Colbert. I am aware that the Michigan Senate recently proposed $350 million for HVAC and roofing in next year's school aid budget. I'm not sure what the status of that is in the process right now, but Dr. Colbert, what impact would that have on beginning to meet the basic infrastructure needs outlined in the study?
Absolutely. So as we've said, the study specifically identifies the cost for our existing school buildings to meet that basic health, safety, and wellness standards over the next 10 years. So we are grateful and excited that the Senate proposed this allocation in next year's school aid budget. We look forward to the continued conversation, and we look forward to being a resource for policymakers at the federal, state, and local levels, and hopefully that this study will continue to be a part of the conversation as they make informed decisions. You know, while the dollar amount that has been proposed does not address the identified need in totality, it definitely is helpful and it indicates that the importance is being acknowledged and we're investing, you know, in our interest and in our future. So we appreciate that the proposed budget supports the basic school infrastructure needs outlined in the actual study. Mm-hmm. We are very excited and thankful.
You know, I don't know from whom I heard this, but years ago, what you just described, Dr. Colbert, is although the dollar amount might not be what is needed completely, it seems like we collectively now have a seat at the table in terms of understanding and identifying the real true cost of educating a child, which for years, as I know you all know well, was really a political football for any number of reasons. But when you put it in terms of HVAC and some just basic needs of schools, I think it was a really constructive way to get a seat at that table. So I want to take a minute and thank Dr. Davida Colbert, superintendent from Wayne Risa, and Steve Ezekian, Executive Director of the School Finance Research Foundation, and from Oakland Schools, Mr. Ken Gutman, Superintendent, for joining us. I would love to keep you in the loop on this and have you back on the program in the future, because I know this is still in the early stages, but the long-term work of this foundation is essential to the well-being of kids, and I appreciate your time today, and as always, keep up the great work in our schools.
Thank you so much, Bob.
We appreciate you having us. Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we'll be traveling to the west side of the state to chat with Jeff Simon from Forest Hills Middle School. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jeff Simon, the proud principal of Forest Hills Central Middle School in Ada, Michigan. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Hey, I really appreciate being here, Robert. Thanks for inviting me on. I look forward to chatting with you for the next couple of minutes.
Yeah, thanks so much. So, you know, our time on School Talks, we often showcase and feature different programs, either through a career and technical education lens or some of the STEM-based learning that's going on. And in some of my research that I've done on your school, you have a program out there that operates under the nationwide program Project Lead the Way, that I found, frankly, intriguing, that is being offered to middle school students. And I'd like to give you a chance to tell us, you know, what those areas are that you're participating in through Project Lead the Way, and how it's a good opportunity for kids.
Yeah, so you used the word intriguing, and I think that was kind of the word that stuck in our brain a couple years ago when we started adopting this program. We were intrigued by it, right? We wanted to learn a little bit more about what Project Lead the Way was, what it offered our kids, what it could offer our kids feeding forward, you know, into high school and beyond high school. And, you know, we had a teacher that was incredibly passionate about this type of science and the science and technology and engineering and math field. And we know that with all the pieces together, we could kind of explore this as an option for our kids. And, you know, right now we offer three courses to our kids under that umbrella, where kids get to explore these fields. One of them is called Medical Detectives, where they're learning all about the medical field, diseases, and being epidemiologists and dissecting sheep brains. You know, we have a program called Flight in Space, where our students are learning about flight. They're learning about what it would take to fly to Mars. They're learning about what it feels like to fly in a flight simulator. And the third one that we offer, which was brand new this year, is green architecture, and is basically, you know, what it takes to build an environmentally friendly design, both commercial and residential. And they're incredible programs for our kids, where they're just learning an absolute ton about these fields.
And, you know, in your medical detective program, I understand your students go on a field trip to Grand Valley State University to participate in some simulation. Tell us a bit about that simulation.
Yeah, so this is something that our teacher has organized every year that she's done the program. And, you know, so because we're so close to Grand Rapids, we're offered an incredible amount of opportunities just being near the city. And one of those opportunities is the Grand Valley State University Simulation Center, which is right downtown. And our students get to kind of feel like what it would be to be pre-med at university. You know, and again, you think these are seventh and eighth graders who are going into a college environment and engaging in college-type atmosphere. So they get to work with their mannequin patients that have heart rates and blood pressure, and their eyes get dilated and their skin changes colors. And the kids will go into this program and they take what they're learning over the course of the semester, and they kind of engage with them and say, oh, I think this person has, you know, X, Y, or Z. They also get an opportunity to, you know, see different pieces of the body, to feel like what it would be like to be, again, a doctor. You know, the best thing is, you know, they get to engage in, we've been to the, you know, museum in Chicago frequently, and I remember the exhibit where you have the slices of the body, so you can see the central nervous system and the different biologies within, and they have a room in there where our kids get to engage with that. And again, they take what they learn from their course and say, okay, I know that this is that, I know that this is that. And again, being able to touch and experience all of this medical type learning as a seventh and eighth grader firsthand is just incredible.
That's some good stuff. We're currently chatting with Forest Hills Central Middle School Principal Jeff Simon over on the west side of the state, talking about some of the programs they offer under Project Lead the Way. Jeff, you mentioned also your students have the opportunity to participate in flight and space at the Gerald R. Ford Airplane Hangar and some other things. I'm curious, are your students actually able to participate and use a flight simulator?
They are. So we've been fortunate enough through our Forest Hills Public School Foundation to be awarded some grants that truly enhance the entire experience in the classroom. And one of the grants that our teacher wrote was for flight simulators. So we have in our classroom, we have two flight simulators set up with multiple monitors where kids can see a full scale view around them. They have the pedals, they have the rudders, they have everything that a typical beginning plane has in the classroom. They go through their system. They can select a specific airport to fly into. They can select a specific type of plane that they want to fly or that they may have a passion about, and they get in there and they get to fly it. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, Robert, it may be a guilty pleasure of mine, but on the snow days, you know, when the building is empty, I may pop in there. I may pop in there for about an hour or so, you know, just to have a good time and just kind of have fun. Again, on a flight simulator.
Yeah. You know, with the advancement of video game technology, I imagine you have some students who are just, frankly, naturals at using the simulator. I've seen kids over the years use them for any, you know, like you said, pick the plane you want to fly, so on and so forth. But what's interesting about it, though, is it's one thing to play a game. It's another thing when you have a good teacher like your Mrs. Avery Berry actually apply it back to relevant mm-hmm. science and mathematical terms.
Yep.
It sort of takes on a more real world. Coming up after the break, we'll be traveling to the west side of the state to chat with Jeff Simon from Forest Hills Middle School.
I think that's really
important. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
Given the consequences of flying a plane, it's one thing to, you know, crash in a video game, but in the real world, it's obviously a whole different story.
One last aspect of your project, Lead the Way. I'm curious, your green architecture.
Yep.
You mentioned that your students work with in-house architects and things. And how does the integration of technology play into their study of green architecture?
Going back to the grant question and, you know, the technology that we use, you know, we're able to use some professional drafting equipment. And, you know, and one of the things that we like to do is we really like to make sure that we're incorporating community partnerships in all of the programs that we have at Central Middle School. So when we have that grant and we have this professional drafting equipment, our students are drawing, again, on the program, the environmentally conscious designs. And what our teacher has done is they've invited in these architects from Tower Pinkster, you know, professional architects, and our kids are able to show the architects, you know, in a collaborative environment, you know, the designs, and the architects are giving them direct and specific feedback on everything that they're using, you know, from window placement and door placements to flooring and material usage to the type of shingles that they're using in their drawings. And again, they have a feedback sheet. They're able to take all of this feedback that they're getting from the professional architects and go back and revise their drawings. Mm-hmm. And they walk out of there with a pretty developed design for a building.
What a great opportunity for students. And you know, one of School Talk's primary sponsors is Wakely Associate Architects, and they have shared with me over the years the growing impact that artificial intelligence is having on architectural design. And I can see how that would be a natural extension of these early opportunities that you're providing students.
Right.
So Project Lead the Way is certainly providing students a great opportunity across medical, detectives, flight and space, and green architecture. And with that, Jeff Simon, I want to thank you for joining us on the program from the proud principal of Forest Hills Central Middle School. You're doing a great job out there and really providing students an opportunity with some relevant experience that translates into real-world experiences. So keep up the good work, and I appreciate your time on the program.
Thanks again. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. After the break, we'll chat with principal of Brandon Middle School, Kevin Ayer. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Mr. Kevin Ayer, the principal of Brandon Middle School, way up in northern Oakland County. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. You know, in doing some research on your school, I was intrigued by your school's mission to provide a peer-to-peer program for students, and I think they you refer to it as TIES. Could you tell us a bit about TIES, what it is, and how this program supports and connects with students?
Yes. TIES stands for Teaching, Interacting, and Encouraging Students. And essentially, the program is to foster inclusive, meaningful friendships between students of all abilities. We kind of lead organic relationships through different activities and, you know, fun projects and even trips, and just to try to build a positive culture in the building between all students.
And does this program somehow operate within your normal instructional day, or where does it happen during the school day?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're lucky enough to have something called Seminar, and it's a 25-minute block of time at the beginning of our day, and we use it for a lot of different things. And our peer-to-peer program advisor, Mr. Parsons, he runs this program in that seminar. So all the students that are selected to be in this program that have applied, they are in his seminar, so they have that dedicated time, and that's where he kind of does the planning and the training with these students, and then they go and embed themselves with other students and make those connections of students with all abilities. So that's kind of the structure of it.
So how are students selected or recruited to participate in this program? And once they're selected, do you provide them any training as to how to behave in a peer-to-peer setting?
Yeah, of course. We have an application process and we have nominations. So this was actually our first year of getting it off the ground, and it's a grant-funded program that a couple of our teachers have really just, you know, taken and have ran with it. So we did an application process. They had to get, you know, some teachers that would sign in, sign that they would be a good candidate. And then once they are in the program, the guidance and support on things like how to be an inclusive peer leader, strategies for communication, you know, building friendships, how do you support classmates who might have special needs? These are all things that are covered in that seminar period at the beginning of the day and in other ways as well.
So we're currently with Kevin Ayer, principal of Brandon Middle School, talking about their peer-to-peer program. And I want to take a right turn here, Kevin. Doing some research of your school, I understand your students have an opportunity to grow lettuce. Is it part of the curriculum or a particular class? Tell our School Talks listeners a bit about how you cultivate and maintain lettuce in what I think you call your school garden.
Yeah, sure. It's an opportunity that kind of came our way through one of our facilities people. They came to us and they said, look, there's this money available, there's this place looking for schools that want to participate in a hydroponics type program. They will provide the equipment, you have to provide the, you know, the man and woman power, and we have an outdoor education class, which is an elective that we started this year. And Mr. Laux is the teacher of the class, and he was all over it. He said, absolutely, we'll embed it in that curriculum. And so that's kind of how it all came together. The machines came. There's two main machines that we have, and they came very quickly. And they, you know, he was trained on it, and then from there he trained, you know, the students, and you know that's away we went.
So what type of lettuce do they grow? I know of two kinds, the romaine and iceberg. Do you grow a particular type of lettuce?
Oh, my goodness. I am not prepared to answer the type. I can tell you this. I know that the lettuce is used in the cafeteria quite often, and it's used for regular salads that we have and for any tacos and other meals. I know we've had some even during one of our staff professional development meetings. We had a big bowl of it, and they said, hey, this is from, you know, Brandon Middle School. So,
yeah.
you know, that's where we're at with that.
It really is the ultimate example of farm to table when you think about how that term is used in the restaurant industry, to have your students growing it and then putting it right into the food that your students are eating. That's a really unique opportunity for them. One last thought. If you had to sort of capture the students who are involved in growing lettuce and participating in this, what kind of specific skills do you think they learn through this activity?
I think one of the main things that has come up in my discussion with Mr. Laux is it's just the idea of they see all stages of farming differently now. They see everything from planting the seeds, you know, checking the water. They learn about pH quite a bit. There's a lot of adjustment in the pH of the water. And so his students are helping him through that whole process. And obviously they're harvesting. I know, I think the last number we had, we grow about 25 pounds of lettuce a month.
Wow.
So our cafeteria is even, you know, finding creative ways to use that much. And that would be the biggest benefit. Another thing he shared was that, 98% less water in land is used in a process like this. If you compare it to regular gardening, like, you know, what's happening in California, for example.
Sure.
There's just a lot of data, as you said, the farm to table, and even the tasting part of it. The kids have commented so much that it just tastes so much better and fresher mm-hmm. when it's coming right off the plant there. So,
yeah, what a unique opportunity. You know, I continue to be impressed all across the state. I've talked to school districts that have really unique situations such as yours, because I know out in Brandon there's probably a fair number of farms in and around your area. Maybe not as many as once, but just how unique schools are providing opportunities based on their geography, and yours being one of them is a really neat example of how you allow students to take advantage of the environment they're living in and making it an academic opportunity at the same time. So with that, Kevin Ayer, the principal of Brandon Middle School, I want to thank you for joining us on School Talks. Your peer-to-peer program is well on its way, and you're growing some lettuce, and I encourage you to keep up the good work, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to thank our guests for joining us on the program today, Dr. Davita Colbert from Wayne Risa, Mr. Ken Gutman from Oakland Schools, and Steve Ezekian, Executive Director of the School Finance Research Foundation. I'd also like to thank Jeff Simon, Principal of Forest Hills Middle School, and Kevin Ayer, Principal of Brandon Middle School. This concludes our first full school year on School Talks, and I'd like to take a moment and thank our sponsors for their continued support of this great program. That includes Plant Moran Real Point, Clark Construction, Wakely Associates Architects, Collins and Blaha Law, O'Reilly Rancilio Law, and Must Construction Careers. Without them, I couldn't continue to bring this to you on a weekly basis and share all the great things happening in our schools. So special thanks to our sponsors. Have a safe and wonderful summer, and remember, throughout the summer, I'll be updating you on the program with all of the summer programs and activities available for students, as well as the amount of work that will be done in the schools through construction and architecture and so on that helps get them ready for next school year. That's all the time we have for now, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.